Good morning, good evening, welcome to episode 100 of the Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from a secretive place here in San Francisco, somewhere near the big V show going on next door. We got a big cast of characters, our sort of friends and family of the show from the last 100 years. Christian Riley, Joe Onasek and his admin, Aaron, Peter Hulander, Amy
Did
Lewis.
Your voice crack on that one?
And, wow. Amy Lewis and Nick Weaver are all joining us tonight. Guys, thanks for being on show 100. Back when you were all on the first time, what did you think the odds were that we'd ever get to show 100?
Me? None.
No.
You started in the beginning, right?
You were editing.
Talking about that over tequila shots.
Yeah,
the show.
We did some tequila shots earlier, and we were talking about the chances of ever getting to 100, and yeah, it was none. So, this is quite a milestone.
So we're at 100. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. So we decided the theme of today's show is we've sort of talked about sunshine and unicorns and blown cloud smoke up your ass for 99 shows. So today we're going to talk about why cloud sucks, and that's going to be the theme of today's show in various formats. So so first and foremost, I guess we should thank the people for having listened for 99 other shows.
Skip this one.
Yeah, you may not want to get to this one.
But seriously, though, to give everyone a little bit of perspective, so we were talking about it earlier, we get twice the downloads per month that we did in our entire first year. So
there's either a bot out there that
so
downloads
like
us a lot.
So that's like 20.
It's Joe's admin.
Joe's admin. Yeah.
Joe's admin is downloading. Yeah, we've got like 20 or 30 solid listeners out there, so thank you. We really appreciate it.
We had no idea our family was that big. Nieces and nephews.
But no, it's been fantastic. It's been a fun run over the years, without a doubt.
All right, so I'm gonna poll the audience. I'm gonna go first though, before we jump into anything. So I got two kind of good stories from VMworld, and these come directly off of the floor when I was out booth babing.
That too.
Totally separate.
So first one, guy comes up to me and he looks at me and I say, hey, how's it going? He looks at me, looks at my badge, and he goes, you are really, really good at jumping on stuff after the bandwagon has left. Just dead straight. And I was like, oh, that's great. Thank you. And then my second favorite one was somehow we got to talking about Citrix, and I don't remember what the context was, but the guy goes, wherever Peter Hulander goes, I am going in the complete opposite direction. I will never follow that guy anywhere.
Well, you know what the good news about that is, A, I think you didn't jump on the bandwagon. You created the bandwagon. And, you know, I've been out of jobs 4 times, having to change companies. So, yeah, it wouldn't follow me either.
Yeah, I told the guy. I said, well, you know, when you have a track record of having sold 4 companies, I can see why you'd want to run away from that. Just to change the Well, this guy was off changing the world, doing whatever. So, anyways, any good stories from VMworld from anybody?
Nick, you got to have one.
Everybody looks at me.
Yeah, you got to have one.
Huh. Favorite story, my newest favorite story from last night is the big VCHS party where none of the engineers went to it. Which I thought was kind of funny. We went to the EMC's party instead. Other than that, no, man, it's actually been kind of boring. Kind of like, there's no drama.
Yeah, and on a serious note, the hybrid cloud stuff that announced this week.
Congratulations.
Absolutely, congratulations,
dude.
So I had a conversation with some guys earlier. You have built more products than anybody I know personally, just so you know that. It's pretty friggin' cool. So, yeah. I'm not saying all of them were a hit. No, I'm just kidding.
No, they were, yeah.
Those are just the ones Peter worked on.
That's awesome.
But, I mean, the reception this week, without a doubt, has been very cool.
Yeah, you
towards
know,
the hybrid cloud stuff.
The craziest thing is, I mean, and I'm not on the sales side. I'm R&D back behind the scenes, you know, man behind the curtain. But, man, every time you talk to a customer about it, I mean, you get amazing response. I mean, there's definitely, it seems, I mean, so you know, off the record, off my VMware badge, it seems to me something like they probably should have done a long time ago. Like, everybody talks about how late it is, but, I mean, we talk to customers, they're like, oh, about damn time.
Right.
Why did you guys not do this, and why wasn't this not available? something.
So are you on pager duty then, permanently?
Yeah.
The cloud?
Actually, kind of. My guys are. Yeah. I don't have production access. It's kind of a rule. I don't get to have production access. So, which means they can't call me to fix anything.
All
right. But they got to let them know before they can take a potty break.
That's right.
Somebody's got to buy the pizza.
Chained to the desk.
You know?
All right. So question number one, roundtable question. Why does cloud suck?
Peter?
Oh, don't pull me in. You know what? I think we still fight. It's funny. So I've had a chance, literally, it's almost been once a year now that I've sat down with you guys. I sat down right after the acquisition. Mm-hmm. I sat down with you guys at VMworld last year when Joe hosted it at his fabulous spot here in the city. You know, I think we're still at that point where we haven't moved off dev test.
No.
And we're just at the cusp of getting to real enterprise payloads and real workloads running on this stuff. And you know what? As you do that, it gets hard. And the harder it gets, the more things that fail, the more things people start to get frustrated. And you hear the screams of, man, that really sucks. But the thing is, it's kind of the Gartner role. What is it? The trough of disillusionment. we're right at the bottom of that, right? And in that
there's
sense,
a graphic that goes
there
with
is
that
a graphic. And,
to
me, and,
maybe you could sketch that.
There's quite a face.
You know, I think that's what it's called, right? Let's whiteboard it, right? There's a unicorn right at the bottom of it. But the thing is,
now I understand. You've translated.
We're at the bottom of that because of the fact that we've gone from this proof of concept, early stages, dev test only, hackable, breakable, who cares about the system, to real workloads that are running in production with customers on it. And you know what? That's where it gets hard. Yeah. And as that starts to transition, I would say that there's a lot of people between the Amazon outages, the private cloud outages, the fact that your Netflix won't stream that wonderful My Little Pony episode that you like.
Exactly.
Aaron. Those are the things that make cloud suck. And I think we're starting to see more and more of that as we start coming out of that trough. And as things go more into production.
Joe, I know, wants to answer this question.
He's dying to jump out of his seat.
So. He's angry. This is a topic right for him.
The only thing I can think of to say, why cloud sucks is because it wasn't built correctly in an ASIC.
The ASIC cloud.
Perfect.
The ASIC cloud.
Because that's really the only place to build the internet of everything.
There you go.
That's awesome.
Nice.
So, and I don't know that we've ever told the Angry Joe story, though.
No, we've never. I don't think we ever have told.
So we might as well 100. We might as well. So unfortunately, we tried very early on to actually have a real format and some production and all that. And we realized that's hard and takes time, so we just quit doing it.
Smart.
You were going to be a regular guest on the show. You were going to have a segment where you were just going to rant.
That discussion. He's going to be like the guy on Comedy Channel, right?
Yeah.
Lewis Black?
Yes, that was exactly that. So the idea was...
I would put him as the little guy on the Chelsea Handler. The little angry guy that screams from the back.
So the goal was to have Angry Joe just have a forum every week to just rant. And unfortunately, again... That just took time and was hard. And
those damn Twitter guys took it over off.
We never even did it once. It never made it out of the pilot stage.
I don't think the audience lost anything by that. Making it in the production.
The displacement theory, it all went on to Twitter.
Yeah.
140 characters at a time.
I would listen to that. Yeah. I would have listened.
So I hate to be the corraler, but we're back on this question. I was the only one that answered, why does cloud suck? Actually, I'd like to hear from you, Brian.
I answered it.
Barely. You just said it has nothing to do with what you're building today. So, Brian,
why does
cloud suck for you?
So here's the thing for me. I walked around the show. I've talked to folks this week just because there happens to be 22,000 people and I don't get to see that many people very often. Most folks that I talk to are somehow freaked out, and they're either freaked out of I'm going to lose my data, I'm going to lose my job, or I'm going to lose revenue. Somehow they all feel like this is going to affect their ability to pay the mortgage or what. That's kind of a weird thing. I don't ever remember being around a technology that had people so basically kind of shitting their pants about what the next 4 or 5 years was going to look like, and they're all basically going where's the next lily pad to jump on for a little while, and then the next one, and the next one. And VMware, any VMware event's always basically a big networking event and whatever, but people are kind of freaked out. And I guess it's good, but maybe we don't remember when we went from, AS400 to PC or whatever the last wave was, but it, I don't don't know. People seem to be kind of freaked out.
You think in our lifetime, right? And you know, I'll speak as probably the oldest guy here in the room. And I'm not
by far.
Old. Give me a break. But I mean, this is a big transition, right? There's probably only been two others in our lifetime, and every time you hit it, there's going to be that point where everybody goes, "Oh crap, what does this mean for me?" And there's two ways of approaching it. There's those that basically head in the sand, "I'm screwed, my data's lost, my job is done." And then there's the other guys that basically jump on it and take advantage of it. And they come to new career highs, and in many ways, the new champions are built during that transition. And I think that's what's really cool about this, right? So as much as I think this has to be a conversation that you got to look at the positive. We can't all be the Eeyores, right? Sometimes you got to be the Piglet, right? Isn't that what it is?
My poo expertise.
I just want to get this move to the cloud over.
Look, you're
so
just
I can
all
sell
after the honey. Come on.
so that I can sell the revolutionary idea of distributed computing to everybody. Once we centralize it all, then we can go back in the circle.
Oh, Joe's all about networking the honey. Again.
That was really good.
Oh, we
though.
Got some questions for you later
so
on, Mr.
It's the technology adoption lifecycle, right? It goes right back to that. And when I talk about automation to like sysadmins, I use that exact same thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, when virtualization first came out, and it's a much smaller scale of virtualization, but it still kind of was one, there were people right then who were used to doing a certain way of, I would look at a white paper, I buy the exact hardware, and I install something on this box.
Yeah.
And then I own this whole world. Nobody could do anything with these servers unless they went through me. And the virtualization scared them because all of a sudden they didn't have the same dominion they had before. And I use that technology adoption curve to go, look, the dudes that got in early on virtualization became the Scott Lowe's and became the people that ended up writing the books and walking the rest of us into this. It was inevitable anyways. You're either on the front edge and you end up being a leader, or you're on the tail edge and end up late to the game every time. There's no difference with the cloud stuff here. I mean, I think it's much bigger, much grander. It's much, much, much more complex because it affects everything. But I totally agree with that. I think it's awesome.
And you know what? Those who have listened to all 100 episodes of the Cloudcast are ahead of the game.
Yes.
Right? It's probably only Brian and I.
About 100 milliseconds ahead.
I only listen to the ones I'm on.
I only listen to the ones I'm not on. That's funny.
You're not a conceited prick.
I'm trying like hell, though.
I only listen to the ones Joe's not on.
It's like a whole fan club for that, though, I think.
There's a whole
shows Joe's not on.
Exactly.
com.
Yeah, exactly.
Joe just has his admin listen to him.
Hey Siri.
I want to answer why I think cloud sucks.
All right, go ahead.
I think cloud sucks because I think up this point, a lot of major companies that own huge enterprise space really, really didn't take it as serious as I thought that they should have. So I mean, I think VMware, I work for VMware, I work for VCHS, but I think with this, VMware's kind of actually like really taking it seriously. I mean, they had products, but they were still focused on enterprise where most of the revenue was. Now they're saying we're all in. In fact, the slide deck I did at the keynote at PuppetConf last week, I showed, like some dogs eating dog food. And I said, look, VMware's always ate their own dog food. We run our own stuff. But there's a difference eating dog food and putting on a dog suit. And VMware, in a lot of ways, I mean, we've got customers who are SPs, and everybody talks about the conflicts there. We're going against Cisco with NSX, right? We're doing stuff that's aggressive there. It's a huge play, but I think a lot more has got to happen besides VMware in doing that. Like, I think it's got to be not just vendors and corporations, but I think even in-house, big shops have got to really adapt and go, hey, we've got to spend years and years and years actually going, rethinking everything we do, because it does not translate over evenly. It's like you were talking about, the production workloads go over. What do you do about compliance? How do I handle security? All those rules completely change. And I think a lot of these guys who are afraid is because they're afraid of actually going down the thought process of, wait a second, I got to start over and rethink the whole thing from scratch. And that's why I think cloud sucks. I don't think anybody is really like. I think majority of people aren't ready for it yet. They're really not prepared at all.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if between VMware sort of finally saying, okay, I'm going to play by this different set of rules, right? So sort of traditional software company playing by the new set of rules. I deliver it via cloud, and you marry that with like the Gartner Magic Quadrant where it was like, there's AWS, and then there's everybody in the bottom left quadrant, and people don't go, holy crap, like, the gaps are either really, like, how do I, because now you're talking about a lot of dollars for a lot of people if those sort of trends continue. So,
well, and it's interesting, too, because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff AWS does not do for enterprise. Like, I mean, I was a customer in enterprise way more than I've been on the vendor side, and there's a whole host of things I can go through and just beat them up over that they just don't do for enterprise. Just, you can't put in there, right? You have to redesign the whole thing from scratch. So if you look at the gaps of what real public cloud is for enterprise, there's a huge gap there because nobody was really going aggressively and playing for the enterprise business up to this point. I mean, there's small mom-and-pop SPs and pure plays and stuff, but nobody was calling Amazon on their gaps. And Amazon now is going the other way, right? They're coming back down towards enterprise and trying to get on-site and hybrid. And you watch Rackspace talk about hybrid like every other word now. So they're all getting it now. But I even think in that magic quadrant, you know, they're being put way up in here because they kind of set, you know, Amazon drew the square, right? This corner, they drew what this corner meant. Yeah. I think that's going to change a bit because the actual demand is more than just what they defined up here.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely. So let me ask you. I got a question. So, and Peter, feel free to jump in on this, or completely defer yourself. So you've got HP Cloud sort of doesn't have a leader. Randy Bias's company doesn't have a CEO right now. Rackspace technically doesn't have a CEO because the guy's stepping down or in the process. So if you got a phone call, Joe, Nick, Peter, and you're going to be the CEO of one of these OpenStack-centric companies, and I'm only throwing it out there because there's folks that want to say, you know, maybe this open sourcey thing and it's OpenStack might be a competitor to one of these. Like, what would you do? Well, how would you run that company given that it's sort of a community thing and it's sort of a for-profit thing, but you might have to take on somebody as big as Amazon or as big as VMware? Like, where would you start? Or do you even not touch something like that because you're like, holy crap, that would be too big a challenge?
I think Joe would run it in an ASIC.
I would definitely run it in an
open
ASIC.
Stack
on, open stack on
I want Joe. That in ASIC in 4 weeks. You're fired.
So I think that's Joe's answer. Joe, go ahead.
I think if somebody called me to run an OpenStack company, I'd be looking for Ashton Kutcher and wondering where the video camera was for Punk.
Wow.
So you know what? I think we can make a lot of fun of the fact that there are vacancies in the OpenStack leadership position.
It's just coincidental. I'm not trying to poke fun.
It is.
Just
you know, the thing is, they have some great leaders there, whether it's Randy or, you know, HP even has someone. After Beery left, someone was put in. I unfortunately don't know their name.
Yeah,
they're not necessarily recognizable. And, you know, across the board, there's a lot of noise going on in OpenStack. And I think when I look in that ecosystem, let's say someone did put me in one of those desirable seats to go run an OpenStack company. I think one of the things that concerns me is you see all the discussions around the API, a lot of discussions between which vendor is right versus which vendor is wrong. A lot of folks focused on, you know, who are they competing with? Is it CloudStack or Eucalyptus or VMware or what have you? If I were in that seat, there are two things that would be my focus. One, from the what keeps me up at night, I'd be scared to death of what Red Hat's about to do. Because that kind of changes the game for all of the individual players that are out there. This whole productized, ready to go, turn it on, download it, and run OpenStack. I mean, shoot, as a non-OpenStack vendor, concerns me, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's clearly something that'll slow down the sales
cycle,
right?
Yeah, don't be in cloud, right.
And so that's one angle. I think the other side, I think, you know, it's interesting that the foundation is new enough. There's some great discussions. There's a lot of passion around what the group should do. But at the end of the day, you're running a company. You better focus on what your customers want you to do. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, whether I'm an OpenStack vendor, a CloudStack vendor, and CME vendor, nah, they don't count.
We call them CMNAs.
Whatever it is. You got to focus on what the customers want. I think, you know, it's funny. I think back to when we first started Cloud.com, the reason why we were successful, we walked into a bunch of companies where the customers didn't know anything about cloud. The vendors that had been in there before told them what they needed versus what they wanted. And that was what opened up the opportunity. And I think there still is a lot of that today.
Yeah.
And in fact, if anything, there's more ambiguity and misunderstanding of where to go in the cloud, that the opportunity is to go in and solve for the customer need versus trying to articulate and dictate how the foundation should act. And whoever leads with the most customers, ultimately, will lead the foundation.
Yeah. So I think Christian, you were an early customer of Peter's. What do you think about that? How did that evolve from your early private cloud days?
At this point, he'd be asking us to, you know, buy a beer, and he'd be using all kinds.
This is where we insert the crickets sound.
Is that what?
Crickets.
I think Peter's pandering for an OpenStack job.
Always, I'm just pandering for a job. No, that's
so, but in the OpenStack space, ahead, the part about working with the customers, I think the PS side and the solution side and the technology evolution part with OpenStack is way more valuable than being a pure SP. We run it and we're donated to the community. I think what you said, I mean, going into some of these shops that are interested in it, because I got friends that do OpenStack stuff here on the West Coast, and they go into these shops and it's a long engagement where they help train them on continuous deployment, on agile methodologies, on how to get OpenStack up. And it's more than just here's OpenStack. It's no, here's a whole bunch of other open source stuff and practices and things to do. And let's do a relationship where we'll get good talent and we'll help evolve your IT into the next generation. I think that's, I think it's what you're really keen on is that the customer's needs, what they really actually need with OpenStack's powerful versus, ooh, I just own, I wrote more lines of code in my company than you guys wrote in your company.
Well, that's where the value of OpenStack really is, is in all the services it requires to get it deployed. That's where you make your money.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Well, and value so, add. And I'll say this, too. It's amazing to me that 2.5 years in on this podcast that we're still talking about things as basic as that. That it hasn't gotten that much easier. In 2.5 the products have progressed. Absolutely. Yeah, do you believe that? It's been 2.5 years.
Holy crap. It's only in the Cloudcast, right?
Yeah, the Cloudcast. Yeah,
they've defined
the
Cloudcast.
Here's the crazy thing. I haven't shaved since then. This is about as good as I've gotten.
But,
that's funny.
You know, at the end of the day, we're still having a lot of the same conversations with the same answers.
Yeah. So that brings up the question. Commodity. I mean, everybody's saying cloud's going to be commodity. Cloud's going to be commodity. Well, you can't have... How do we do this and go straight to commodity immediately after? There's a whole like curve, like, so I mean, the commoditization of the hypervisor, commoditization of the stack, and for private cloud, and eventually the commoditization of public cloud as a service. You can't be going, how the hell do you do all this and then go straight to that? It takes a while. I mean, there's still value to be had there in adding, helping definition services, that kind of stuff. So maybe commoditization is farther off than people say it is.
I would agree with that. I mean, we haven't gotten to commoditization of skills yet. That's the biggest. I mean, like, if you read, like, what's the guy with the crazy hair? The guy,
Blink?
No, the guy who writes Outliers.
Blink, Blink,
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, and he basically says, look, if you want to get really good at something, it takes about.
That from Amy.
No, it's 10,000 hours.
Just to insult you and to add some knowledge.
Literary.
Publishing for 10 years. Go. Gotta do
but
something.
He said, you know, he basically says, look, if you want to be really good at something, it takes like 10,000 hours. So that's what? It would be five full years of doing nothing but trying to figure out automation or DevOps or whatever the hell.
You guys are halfway along.
We're halfway there.
Two and a half years in, right?
2.5 years from now. We may turn out one decent podcast.
2.5 years, they can finally start asking questions that are good.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's hard.
I mean, like, there's just not that many people to pull from. Right?
I also think it's the definition of it, right? I mean, everybody thinks it's the commoditization of the computer, right? Yeah, it's true. The commoditization of services is where we're headed with the cloud. And right now, the only piece we've really hit on well has been probably storage, right? Compute is second in line.
Yeah, absolutely.
And network's coming. And we know that's all software.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there won't
right,
be.
Joe?
There'll be no need for ASICs.
That is one way to look at it.
but I mean, it comes back to that, and I mean, you think about that. I mean, whether it's Gladwell or Nick Carr or what have you, I mean, it is about creating that monster machine, which isn't necessarily cheap.
Right.
That provides power, access, compute, utility, what have you, to the masses. You could argue that today Amazon has done that, but it's probably been more focused on SMBs. Or developers, and the stuff that's come out of there, I mean, come on. It has done significant business building that I don't think a lot of people give credit to for an industry, and now we're at the point where other industries that have built their own engines are trying to go, okay, how can I go seriously leverage this stuff and figure out how it impacts me for my .next projects and products? It doesn't mean go away from what I have, right? We still run mainframes. We still run all this other old
huge
crap.
Business. Those are hardware.
Huge business, right? Yeah.
There's the hardware. But, you know, in the next bit, you know, understanding how we tap into some of these public resources, whether it is the low-cost Amazon model to the Terramark, you know, higher-cost white-glove-type enterprise services to what have you out there. So I think that, and that's where we are. We're starting to see that transition.
Am I forever dubbed the cloud hardware guy now? Is that really?
No, you're just
the
hardware guy.
You did use the word ASIC, so we didn't make you say it.
Yeah.
I'm all about the ASIC. I'm going to start carrying one around in my pocket just for giggles.
Is there an ASIC in your pocket?
So,
do I get to jump in?
Yes, please, Amy.
All right, let me lean in.
Get off the phone for a minute.
Yeah, I know. Do a
She's
work
been
here.
Whispering.
I've been whispering. Yeah. So thinking about what all of you are saying, the unifying theme seems to be people. That in, at a certain place, this is change management. That consumer demand for cloud and the expectations got raised past what the technology could support. And that inherently, technology is not pure. It is in the application and execution of it. So that is why cloud sucks. I can't necessarily get to the cloud fast enough. It doesn't do all the things I was promised. There are no unicorns flying out of its butt, etc. So that is my in-user version of why cloud sucks.
All you need is a credit card. How much faster do you want to get?
Faster than that. That should be in the cloud already. I want it to interpret the power of my thoughts and back my content up.
But realistically, I think, you know, it's so funny when we sit around this table and talk about cloud, we're all about infrastructure, right? We're all the guys that are about speeds and feeds and the server huggers that used to have all that crap in front of us.
Yep.
Step out of that role for 2 seconds and think about the guys that have been running SuccessFactors or Salesforce or running all of these other services as startups and basically redefined how they run their ops, redefined how they expend, capital gains from VCs, right? How are they changing that model? We're still in very much the smallest part, and I think so that's why the cloud sucks, right? Yeah. There's another reason, because all of us talk about the stuff that is slow, that is not doing the security or the scale or the build out or the awesome pipes that we all expect. But the reality is nobody's paying attention to the billions of dollars that are being spent on the sales forces and the success factors and the cloud that's actually been quite successful.
So what? So that's an interesting point. So what happens if I don't know, this is like totally not feasible, but let's say in 5 to 10 years it's just Amazon, Google, and a bunch of SaaS applications, right? I mean, you might look at that and go, that's crazy, but then 6 or 7 years ago, if you said there's only going to be 2 phone manufacturers for the most part, and neither one of them is going to be Nokia or BlackBerry,
yep,
you'd have been like, you're insane, right? So, I mean, like, what if that happens?
So some homework for you. Greg Papadopoulos, he was the CTO of Sun. He came up with a concept called Redshift. I'm not going to go into the definition of what Redshift is from the scientific purposes of it, but it really comes back to talking about brutal efficiency and massive scale are driving the point that, you know, in the next few years, all the world really needs is 5 big supercomputers. And what he was referring to was the fact that we are going to see a Google, an Amazon, and a Microsoft, a Salesforce, a SuccessFactors, and an eBay. And between all of the resources that are happening there, the global economy can effectively start leveraging these online resources to drive business economies and growth. And the limiting factor of getting us there was not compute power. Joe's going to love this because I just walked into it. But it wasn't compute, it wasn't access, it wasn't any of that other stuff. It came back to the fact that networks became bigger, applications became more available, devices, it wasn't just the PC, it was the phone, it was, you know, everything of value being connected to the network, and that drove this new global economy. It was actually a really fascinating thesis that he came back with.
I swear I heard that Chambers said the exact same thing, though.
So it was one of the things I got to work on when I was over at Sun with Greg, and it was just fascinating to think about that because it was a blur of where the cloud is going, but it was this whole concept that as pipes open up and devices become more powerful and we become more mobile, that it isn't about these fat apps sitting on fat systems sitting behind firewalls. It was a community of services being delivered across a global grid, and we're getting to that, right? And it could
think,
be that we.
Well, I don't think it's. I mean, I don't think it's crazy because if you look at like the financial markets, it's like, well, where are the big financial markets? New York, London,
yep.
Tokyo, Hong Kong. There's only like 6 or 7 of them, even
yep.
though there's 200 plus countries and big 7 continents, and so. You know, you get efficiencies, and then you get people that spin off ways that they interact with those markets. So it's not a crazy thought. I mean, it's crazy if you know you sell hardware, but
it's like it's life cycle.
Or you're anywhere in this supply chain, but
you still need to move bits and bytes. There's still hardware in the cloud.
And
It's Am I wrong?
But it's life cycle, and it's about, you know, when we talk about even the word commoditization, it's, you know, changes is intimidating, but it happens often before you think it's going to happen. Who moved my cloud? And it's back to
Don't give Scott Moe an idea for a book.
Yeah, right.
Consolidation, I think, is inevitable, and then you run away from it. So things gravitate, gravity pulls things together, and then people spin off from that because they have another niche idea or another big idea. There's a break. It's a cycle.
There's a lot. I mean, the fear. So what he just said, I mean, with a uber big central power plants, right? So it's like a power plant thing. You got a grid, everybody's hooked into the power plant. And whatever those services are, and I think it's even a bad example because really it'd be like multiple power plants each providing a different service, but you ultimately are interconnected. But that whole fear inside those shops, if you actually go into like most mid-enterprise shops, most of what they're doing in IT, the CEO doesn't want to be doing anyways, right? And so you got two elements. You get the business really just wants to do their business value, right? They just want to build what they're building. And you got that old IT, which is like, I don't get any of this. And I think once that hurdle of those guys walking around VMworld, I don't know what public cloud is, and it terrifies me, my job, I'm fear, all this other stuff. Once there's a path, man, I think it's, like you're saying, it's going to happen. I think it's going to start happening a lot faster. Because once you, those guys that figure out how to go, oh, look, Mr. Business, I can deliver to you quicker, and there's a path here, I can't imagine any business not jumping on that as quick as possible. Even the old school ones, like middle of America farming companies, will be like, man, so I don't have to have a data center, period. How much money am I going to save? How much? I mean, I don't have to have the word sand come up on my budget every, you know, 9 months.
but I mean, every startup nowadays, that's a requirement to get funding. I still remember when we were first getting started. Shoot, whether you want to say when we first got started with cloud.com to the day we were acquired, we didn't have a data center.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't have an IT guy. We didn't have boxes sitting anywhere. We were running from public cloud services, some of them in Amazon, some of them in some of our customers. And that was the way we ran our business. And what that did was it changed the fundamental economics of where we invested. Right? We invested in things that impacted our customers and drove our bottom line and our revenue.
Right.
IT doesn't necessarily do that. It becomes a strategic asset for how we go do that. But when you can start to play with the monies to say, I'm not going to spend the $5 million of my A round to build a data center and put a bunch of boxes in there, I'm actually going to focus it on something else. That becomes extremely powerful. And that's what started in the cloud. I mean, that's really where we look at all the successes of the Amazon and the public cloud to date. I think where we're getting to is, you know, we can go to a Gladwell type story where you go talk to the Danish pig farm who figured out that using the cloud, he can probably gain more business selling bacon in the Carolinas to Miss Unicorn here. Right? But I mean, that was a stretch. But
that should be the title of a book.
That's
cloud bacon?
Selling bacon
to Miss Unicorn.
To Miss Unicorn in North Carolina.
From the cloud.
From the cloud.
From the cloud, yeah.
But I mean,
that was the original title from Little Miss Sunshine.
I totally agree with that. I mean, it's right on the money. I think the funny thing is everything's an evolution, right? I mean, everything is a compete the winners. It's always sort of the same cycle. And that pig farmer that figures out that he can actually leverage that cloud, he just does some research and starts using it, has got to be the one that's going to, like, start to dominate, and then everybody else is just going to follow. It goes back to that technology adoption life cycle. It's not just the tech people, but it's also the businesses that learn to adopt.
We've got to get the cloud out of tech.
Right.
We've got to start seeing real businesses running this stuff, not just finance and web scale and the run of the mill.
Not where you're forced into it.
When the businesses that you would never normally predict to leverage these types of technical assets start using them, that's when you see that tipping point. That's
and not just, I created an iPhone app, like not like what we see nowadays.
We just have to make this happen fast so we can centralize the data for the NSA to collect it. I mean, just make their job easier.
Well, that's what I was going to comment on when he says, so, there'll eventually be five companies. I'm like, well, the NSA's going to love that.
Exactly. And that'll be interesting because those five companies, I think three of which will have to exist outside of the U.S. just because of that.
Probably.
Yeah. We still don't really, I guess you could say things like Baidu and stuff, but there really isn't a non-U.S. super huge guy yet. I mean, I guess Google's global, but there isn't
like
a massive European one. There's not a massive South American one that you point to.
Yeah,
I mean, other than what was our original thing on Google? What's the Google social network that we're on?
Orkut.
Yeah.
The one that died?
Yeah.
We distribute on that one.
Exactly.
All right, so last question. We're kind of getting to where we should start drinking and move on for the night. So
keep drinking.
So most of our shows, most of the time we get together, it's in Vegas or it's in San Francisco. It's somewhere very nice. We eat very well. You see tons of people spending crap loads of money.
How do I get invited to these parties?
Dude, you pay for them. You don't come.
You get invited to the website.
Are all shows going to end up being in Portland once everything becomes a commodity and everything's 50% off the margins?
Yeah, we know Nick's okay with it.
Oh, yeah, I'll do that all day.
Joe, how do you feel about Portland?
Fucking hippies.
Wow. Wow, that was...
It's close for you.
That was classic Joe.
And that was a hint of Angry Joe if he would have made it on the podcast.
You really need to do that segment. Please do that. I would laugh my ass off listening to this guy do that stuff.
Or they could just do sound bites and just replay them.
Just one or two sentences.
Yeah, exactly.
You know the Family Guy thing? You know, it really grinds my gears. That's what you need to do. This is what grinds my gears.
Yeah.
Right. You can scale them. You just abstract it.
Just keep
record
it.
Don't want Joe on auto scale. That's not a good thing.
Well, Puppet had their conference in San Francisco.
Yeah,
they more than doubled from last year, and they're gonna do better than that next year. So even local Portland DevOpsy beards and pink hair companies, San Francisco conference now. So,
So I have a different view on this. I think it's great that we all get together. But I come to these shows and it's all the same people talking all the same crap. And,
you know,
the reality is it is an echo chamber, right? And it's still 80 to 90% vendors. The things that I've been actually quite impressed with are the global road shows, like whether you see what Amazon's doing, which I think they've kind of mastered that one ahead
of
everybody else.
Guy, Roof's Cloud Camp.
Roof's Cloud Camp, yeah. Roof did. I should say your guy, right? We hired him from Virtus.
No, he's your guy.
But no, you look at Cloud Camp, what Reuven's done, it's good. these things that basically take things local. Right, and it rather than the 50,000 people that destroy an entire city for 5 days, you're actually getting learnings. We've leveraged it, of course, in a lot of our cloud stack stuff. We hold our Build a Cloud Days around a number of key cities for us, and the benefit there is you're actually seeing 90% customers, users. Versus 90% vendors. And I think that's actually how things will go. These are things for us all to get together and the vendors to sit and talk to ourselves and echo chamber and what have you. But I think the learning's going to start happening in the field.
I think it's both. I think you have to have these moments in time that we all build toward and love or hate. You know, your feet hurt, you're tired, etc. But then you have the user group. You have the community-based learning. Yeah. So my favorite C word, community. Mm-hmm. And that kind of training, the peer-to-peer learning is distributed and indispensable.
And the geo matters too. So the cool thing about the localization is a lot of issues tend to be in that area. Like there's guys, because I did a bunch of stuff this year where I went to Toronto and New York, a bunch of different places. And when I would talk to people after speaking, I would end up hearing, I talked to one guy or one company and then I talked to another company and they're kind of in the same business and the same problems, and there's always a commonality in the area. And then I go to New Jersey and the conversation was completely different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about automation, but even the way they saw it was different because in one case, their use cases are much, much different. And they're an old school, they're a 200-year-old company, and the other one, they're 10 years old, right? And so I agree. And the unconference stuff is awesome because you limit the sales pitch. And I also think that the longer an industry starts to mature, right? So the front end of that technology adoption cycle is where they adopt the unconference and the local community is good because there's not enough material for the vendors to latch on as partners. And then as things mature, you start having the partner engineering and the extra vendors and all the booths start to pop up because now it's mature enough that you can latch on to it and you can provide a value add.
Yeah.
So I think in this phase for public cloud and for peer cloud stuff, we're definitely in the earlier phase. So yeah, the unconference is going to be much more powerful than a whole vendor meetup.
And I just come back to the fact that regionality is going to be huge. Yeah. You got to go where the users are. I actually, I'll be the first to say, I think the OpenStack conference that's coming up in Hong Kong will be the biggest and most successful and most user-driven event that they've seen since they launched this event. right, since they launched this effort.
You've never done an event in Asia that show up like
that. Oh, it's incredible. But, I mean, the same thing's happening in Europe. You got to go to where the users are. Yeah. And, you know, we've all been so – these big conferences, if you go back to the early days, because it was the Java ones, it was, you know, all of these – I mean, that's where it all started. Who was that about? That was about all the guys in California writing crap in Java, and maybe a few resellers showed up. That's been the model to date. It hasn't so much been on the users, and I think the shift to the user model is going to change the dynamics of shows. And I think that's where it gets really exciting.
Yeah, who cares about the user?
Oh, true. Seriously. You are the hardware guy. Users or not, it doesn't matter.
I will say that there are outliers, like the Puppet conference last week. I mean, there was no selling. Even Puppet wasn't really selling. It was. All the sessions were like 80% of the sessions were not Puppet employees.
Well, I think people are learning from the open source front, right? Whether it's a PuppetConf or FOSDEM or any. And remember, all of these up until PuppetConf have all been held in obscure locations, right? San Diego, New Orleans, Brussels, right? These aren't the hubs that we all see the big, big shows happening in. And that's because that's where you're getting the developers, and it's where you're getting the users.
Well, it's the next gen idea. When we talk about that, the circle of life again, things are big. Then small things come and challenge them. The big things explode. The small things grow. It's the same thing we talked about with technology as well. The events will go through that same process.
And application top heavy. Application conferences have always been different than infrastructure. Yeah. Yeah. Infrastructure stuff has always been your big interop style million booths, million vendors. And so I think some of the influence of application development and the fact that that's ultimately the purpose of cloud and the one reason we want to use it, I think that is having a huge effect also, because I've been to very few application-focused stuff that was super, super vendory. Because it's tough to do that. It's all PS and people and personality more than it is just buy this license and plug in and go. Yeah.
So we're going to get a mix.
You want to wrap it up, man?
Sure.
Still awake?
So... I just want to say real quick, too, we are on Swell Radio now. If you're not familiar with it, it's a new app and new service that's out there. It's
Pandora for podcasts.
Pandora for podcasts is the way to put it. You kind of just pick a category and podcasts come up.
So what podcast plays after I listen to you?
I don't know. NPR, I'm sure. But it's actually really cool. I've been listening to it a good bit recently. It's one of those, like, definitely you have no idea what's coming next, and you kind of get some different exposure to some different podcasts. And I submitted us, and they accepted us in the technology section. So it was actually pretty cool. And they're growing huge, like, just in their first month or so. They just came out a couple weeks ago. So thanks to them. Definitely go check them out. But if you like the show, please tell a friend or leave us a review on iTunes. We've only said this 100 times, and we have like 16 reviews. So please go give us a review.
I don't know how many users you have.
I know, exactly. So you can follow us on Twitter at TheCloudCastNet or on the web at TheCloudCast.net, where you can find links to everything Cloudcast. And yeah, seriously, 2.5 years, it's pretty friggin' amazing. So thank you, everyone.
Congrats.
So thanks to Joe and Peter and Amy and Nick and, of course, Christian.
And Christian.
Being on tonight, guys.
Couldn't have done it without him.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being part of the show, and hopefully you'll come back again on when we get to 200 or 1,000 or at least 101 or something like that. So thanks, guys.